Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. I can't get out of my head this story about Gene Kranick, the Obion County, Tennessee man who, with his family, lost everything they owned in the fire last week, along with three dogs and a cat, because he hadn't paid a $75 fee for private fire department insurance or firefighter response. I can't get this story out of my mind. And the reason for it, first, is the tragedy of this man and his family. Everything gone. Did he have fire insurance? Yeah, he's got fire insurance. And Keith Olbermann has featured him, his story, and him a couple of times on his program. So there are people who want to help this family get back on their feet. He says he forgot to pay the annual $75 fee. The fire started when the Kranick's grandson was burning trash near the family home. And as the fire grew out of control, the Kranick's called 911, but the fire department from the nearby city of South Fulton, Tennessee, wouldn't respond. Mr. Kranick said one of the operators told him, "Well, you're not on the list." Kranick said he told the operator he would pay whatever necessary to have the fire put out, and the offer wasn't accepted. And the firefighters involved in this, it's my understanding that some of them went home afterward after watching this house burn down and were very emotionally distraught. The president of an association representing firefighters said the decision to let the home burn was, quote, incredibly irresponsible, end quote. South Fulton's mayor said that the fire department can't let homeowners pay the fee on the spot because the only people who would pay would be those whose homes are on fire. This was a blessing. This was a wondrous thing to behold. It was beautiful. It was soul satisfying to the teabaggers and the Ayn Rand suckheads and the Republicans, the corporatists. This was wonderful. This was beautiful. It was perfect. There could not have been a more rewarding event than for Gene Kranick's home and that of his family to burn to the ground because he hadn't paid a $75 annual fee. Every single teabagger in America became orgasmic over this, especially the filth at Fox News Channel. This was great because it made the point, didn't it? Didn't make the point. It made the point perfectly. This is the new world order. You pay or you die. Very simple. You pay or you die. When the teabag Republicans take over after November 2nd coming, this plan will be extended, I don't know, to hospital emergency rooms. Right now, emergency rooms are required, is that by law or is it morality or ethics, to take people whether they can pay or not. But that will soon end. The teabaggers, you see, their entire philosophy is, die, you son of a bitch, unless you have money. That's the corporate philosophy. That's the capitalist philosophy. It always has been. Don't act shocked. Don't be shocked. Progressives, normal people, Democrats tried in this country for generations to overcome that built-in killer app in capitalism. We tried everything. Unions, child labor laws, laws against men beating up their wives and children for sport, We tried. I mean, Social Security is another one. Medicare is another. Everything. We've tried. Postal Service, police departments. We've tried to overcome the fatal flaw. Well, it's not a flaw. The fatal aspect of capitalism. Capitalism, you see, as we've said a million times, is called capitalism because it's about capital. It's not about people. It's not about a social contract. It's not about people working together. It's not about what Jesus talked about. As you do to these, the least of my flock, you do it to me. The teabaggers, these phony-ass Christians, they believe none of this. So, Gene Kranich's house burning to the ground, and his dogs and cats being cooked. This made every teabagger in America thrilled. It was thrilled. The only thing that would have made it better, if maybe one of Gene Kranich's grandchildren would have been in the house, or maybe his wife asleep and had burned up. That would have made Glenn Beck just dance like a drop of water on a hot pancake griddle around his studio. He would have been so happy. Absolutely. This is what the teabag philosophy is. And this is what's going to govern the United States after November 2nd, because poll after poll after poll shows that American voters are tired of the Negro in the White House, the Kenyan. We want our country back. And capitalist America is dumping hundreds of millions of dollars into that very effort. Citizens United case decided by the Supreme Court said, hey, put all the money, all the filth and corruption you want to put into it. It's time to end this cheesy-ass little experiment in self-governance called representative democracy. Now, God, it's time to get rid of the freeloaders. Burn them out. Cauterize America. Get rid of them. Americans with Disabilities Act. Oh, my God. I remember that was passed. And all the capitalists, all the corporatists just pissed themselves. Oh, this means we got to put ramps every place? We have to make the doors wider for these wheelchair freaks? Oh, my God. Americans with Disabilities Act has been a target in the rhetoric, anyway, of right-wingers ever since it was passed and became law. It's socialism. It's communism. It's not Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged, horse hockey. So the burning of this man's house and the death of the family pets and the loss of everything, every memento, everything they had gone, because a $75 fee. And the beauty of it is, he would have paid $1,000 on the spot. Please! Put out the fire! Sorry, sir, we'd like to, but we can't. Our bosses tell us we can't. We're firefighters, yes, sir, that's what we do, but we can't put the fire out in your house. Because our bosses say, no, your name's not on the list, you didn't pay your $75 fee. I forgot! It's too bad, sir. Next time you build a house, if you build it in this county, don't forget to pay the fee. Very simple. Every single filth-encrusted teabagger in America, all of these sons of bitches, were ecstatic to see this story. Because it made the point better than any of them could possibly make. You pay or you die.
Of boredom for trying to change the system from within. I'm coming now, I'm coming to reward them.
The very Gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. And Julie writes, it's Obion County, not Obion County, where Gene Kranich lives, Obion County in Tennessee. What's this? Somebody says I'm lying. Oh, let's get out of the way. Hello, Kelly.
Hey, how are you?
Well, not very good when I look on my screen and it says you're lying about the Tea Party. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, I go to Tea Parties, and there's no way that any of us would want that house to burn down. We should think that the fire department should have put it out, whatever they paid.
But that's against your philosophy.
It's not.
Well, sure it is. Your philosophy is to dismantle all the social services. Listen, Kelly, if you want to be a jerkwad, you can be a jerkwad, but not on this program. I have listened to all these Tea Party candidates, and all they talk about is getting rid of all these social services, right? Do you deny that?
Well, first of all, I haven't called you a name, so please don't.
No. I said, do you deny? I said, don't be a jerkwad. I didn't say you were one. You're getting awfully close to it. Are you denying that the Tea Party candidates want to get rid of everything from Social Security to libraries to public fire departments? Are you denying it, Kelly?
Yes, I deny that they want to get rid of
it. Oh, go away. Jesus, God. Get off my radio. Just get off my radio. Go away! You're not supposed to be listening to this program anyway. This is not for you. Go to a teabag movement thing. Go set somebody's house on fire. I don't, just go away. Jesus, God. Why do these people call me? Kate writes, Mike, the story didn't affect me as it has other folks because where I lived in Arizona, the people belong to a subscription fire service. This extensive coverage has given me a broader picture, one that simply confirms my already jaded perception of where we are headed. As I understand, the Arizona company owns their own equipment and not subsidized by taxes. I don't know what happens if the neighbors who aren't members were burning down. It hasn't been tested yet. There are a lot of neighbors who live there only in the winter who aren't members. It is simply a fact. Living in a remote county where there is no metro or county fire service, when the voters are asked to expand services for safety, and other services, including schools, they always turn it down. The attitude of the migrant northern retirees is, I've raised my kids, why should I pay for these illegals? That attitude spills over into anything that involves a few pennies increase on property taxes. There are neighbors there who don't have the money to pay for the service. Thankfully, no one around us has ever had a fire. Our country is burning down. P.S. Speaking of subscriptions, those who aren't contributing to this two-bit radio program are simply sitting by and watching it burn down for want of a quarter. Just saying. Kate. Well, thanks, Kate. What she's referring to there at the end, a one-year podcast subscription to the program is $59.60, which works out to 25 cents a program. And we are down, way down in subscribers. And I don't talk about this a lot. I figure if you people want the program to stay on the air, you'll subscribe. I'm not going to make a big deal about giving a pitch, but it's very true. Remember, we are liberals. We are progressives. We are people that believe in truth and justice, and therefore we don't fit into the capitalist or corporate model. And it's not just us. Anybody who believes in truth or justice or holding these teabag bastards accountable for the things they say or you know, whatever it is, we don't fit into this society. The society now is corrupted to the point where it's a wonder it can move. But anyway, yeah, thanks for the plug, Kate. If you want the program to stay on the air, go to MikeMalloy.com and subscribe. I know times are tough. If you can't do $59.60, sign up for, what is it, $7.95 a month or something? I don't know. Again, I don't mention it a lot because that's just not me. I hate to beg for money. I won't beg for money. I'll go out of business first. You know what it takes to keep this program on the air. And if you want to do that, you'll do it, right? Right. Yeah, I remember during the last big round of fires in the hills outside of Los Angeles in L.A. County, the private fire departments that were, you know, screaming around the streets as houses burned, and they had an address list to go to. They couldn't stop at the ones that were burning unless it was on their list. This is America's future after November 2nd. This is what the teabag bastards, this is what they love. And like I say, the only thing that upset them was the fact that Gene Craddock's house didn't have a human being in it when it burned. I won't give up that
yourself with the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Seth is in Gulfport, Mississippi. Hello, Seth.
And well, you'll be happy to know that I'll be subscribing to your podcast when I become a truck driver.
You what? Oh, good. Thank you.
Yeah, but the reason why I was calling, I may have to make you proud, Mike. I managed to piss off some Christians tonight.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. What happened was we were talking. There was another radio show that I was listening to, and we were talking about the fire.
Uh-huh.
Over in Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
And one of the hosts asked, do the people in Tennessee do not care? And I answered, yeah, they don't care. They're Christians.
Okay.
I gotta say, they heard me say that. They were like, ooh, you just unleashed a hornet's nest.
Yeah, well, what happened? Uh-oh, he's gone. What happened to our caller? Okay, he disappeared. Kimberly is in Fairfax, Virginia. Hey, Kimberly.
Hi, Mike. I was just calling to do a little firsthand report because when the president did his first neighborhood backyard meeting, it was actually my neighborhood, and I'll admit, I was a bit embarrassed because while I had seen some of the tea partying sorts on the TV, I guess I really didn't realize that I had a number of them for neighbors.
Mm.
And they were actually holding up signs that said things like worst president ever. They put on their worst president ever t-shirts. You know, they had things that said, where's your birth certificate? But the one that really got me, and this is one of those 2020 hindsight things where, you know, gee, you just wish you'd really said something, but one of them was holding up a sign that said no government run health care, and it was all I could do to go down the street and say, you know, just you wait. I really don't wish you will, even as silly as you're acting, I don't wish you will, but just wait until you become terminally ill. You're going to find out just what your health care is like. You're going to find out about lifetime limits.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to find out about doctors you're not allowed to visit. And you're going to be surprised. I mean, but the whole attitude is exactly what you're referring to, and it is so scary. Of I've got mine, and you don't have yours, too bad. And I mean, I've said this before again and again to people, you know, this is a great country, I love this country, but we can't beat our chest and say, USA, greatest country in the world, if you let people die in the street because they can't afford health care.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, Kimberly. I hate to be a Cassandra type, but it's going to get much worse.
Oh, I'm sure.
Before it ever, if it ever does, start to get better. The country, the United States, has been driven into the ground by predatory capitalism. They've sent the jobs out of the country. They are spending millions of dollars to defeat any measure that may make any attempt to rescue the middle class that really existed in this country from the end of World War II up until about 1980. It was great. You know, it was about 50 years of, not that much, about 40 years of this burgeoning middle class. Unions were strong, wages kept going up, people were doing great, and the capitalists, the greedheads, decided, no. So it's being butchered, and it's being butchered by these halfwits called the teabaggers as they, suck up all the money that capitalist America is pumping into the country, into this movement. So the thing is, Kimberly, like I said, I hate to be a downer for you, but I think you know, too, that it's going to get much, much, much worse. And it may or may not ever turn around. May not in my lifetime, your lifetime. I don't know. Maybe our kids, grandkids, great-grandkids. But until I truly believe this, until Americans wake up to the idea that capitalism is killing them. It's killing them. It's killing their children. I'm not talking about small businesses. I love small businesses. Hell, I've owned two or three. I have one right now. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about the family farm. I'm not talking about little manufacturing plants that a couple of guys or a couple of women put together in their garage and they wound up hiring 50, 60 people. I'm not talking about that. That's wonderful. That's Jeffersonian. These dumbass teabaggers wouldn't know Jeffersonian from a bag of doorknobs. But capitalism, and the financial slash banking industry has destroyed the United States. It's over. It's ended. And whether or not it makes a comeback, I don't know. Kimberly, I got to move on. Thanks. Appreciate it. Dan is in Brunswick, Georgia, listening on XM. Hey, Dan.
Well, good evening, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
I didn't know if you knew it or not, but in Georgia, we have a county that has a pay-as-you-go fire department as well.
Well, it's not that unusual. I know that in parts of the West, you'll find this. My point simply is, if a county is so dirt poor that it cannot afford services like a fire department, then I guess some other system has to be devised. But
however, Chatham County is probably one of the richest counties in the entire state.
Oh, it's Chatham County?
So, yeah, Savannah.
So you're saying that Savannah, Georgia, does not have public fire service?
The city limits, if you live in the city, you do have city tax funded fire department.
And as soon as you get outside the city limit in Chatham County, there's no...
It's private. Has been forever.
Well, I'll be darned. Why is that? Is that because...
No idea.
Is it possible?
I remember back in the 60s when I lived there, I lived in a subdivision on the south side of the county, and a house about a block away caught fire. And they came out, and they just sat there and watched it. And the fellow who lived there was in the Air Force at the time, and the fire department from Hunter Army Airfield actually came out and put out the fire. That was back in 64, 65.
64 and 65?
About then. I was still in high school then. And I own property in Chatham County, and I have to pay every year.
What does Chatham County not have property tax?
Yeah, oh, they have a property tax. We pay for police protection.
Uh-huh.
We have trash pickup, and of course it's been privatized now too, but it's still part of the county system though.
Wow. Well,
the fire department has always been a private fire department.
Well, I'll be damned. I had no idea. Well, you know, even though it's been there, it's been that way for every day, and I don't think that makes it right if Americans are not able to organize themselves to the point where fire services can be provided out of tax money. I think it's further proof that the country is just, it's dead. There's no point pretending it isn't. Dan, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Mike is in La Quinta, California. Is it La Quinta?
Yeah, it's La Quinta.
La Quinta. Hey, Mike.
Hi, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Yeah, I think we are in trouble, and I think the plan is not for recovery because, you know, I think if our politicians were serious, you know, the Congress and the president would be ordering these corporations to bring these jobs back. And that's the only way we're going to recover. I mean, what else is going to help, you know, our economy?
Yeah, what else? I'm sorry, I didn't quite get it. What's going to help our economy, if not what?
Well, I think unless our president, you know, the thing is that we're getting a lot of rhetoric from the Democrats and Republicans.
Right.
Looking for a solution to help our economy.
Right.
But the only thing that's going to help us is if our Congress and our president make an order for these corporations to bring these jobs back.
Well, the only way that's going to happen, Mike, they can't order them. I mean, what would be...
Well, they actually could, but they will never do that.
Well, I don't think they
can. That's my point.
I mean, what would be the penalty if they didn't comply? Shoot them?
Well, I mean, they would just mail the corporations and say anybody who wants to start the new corporation can or take these CEOs out of their office.
All right.
I mean,
right, well,
you see how people reacted with GM when they tried to rescue them.
Right. Well, listen, I agree with you in spirit that there should be a mechanism in place where people who are destroying the United States or destroying our so-called way of life should be held accountable. But we don't have that system. We can't do it. The Chinese have that system. If somebody starts destroying their way of life, they just take them out and shoot them. End of story. I kind of laid out my ideas about what you're talking about a couple of weeks ago, and that is to put heavy tariffs, real heavy tariffs, on any product that's imported into the United States from another country, especially if it's made by an American-owned corporation, say in China, that has sent thousands of jobs to that country. They make the same stuff and then send it back over here. I don't know how in the hell they expect us to buy it. But I think punitive tariffs, which would immediately start a trade war all over the planet, which I think would be good. And maybe then corporate America or capitalist America will come back to the United States and give us poor working stiffs another shot. You know what I'm saying? Mike, I got to leave there. Thanks, pal. We'll be right back.
Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Michael in Madison writes, you're right about the teabaggers and the Ayn Randites' reaction to this man's house burning down. No doubt it elicits glee, a sense of smug satisfaction. But satisfaction over what exactly? Does it confirm for them the Hobbesian edict that life is in fact nasty British and short, and that somehow God favors those who get and those who don't were meant to be cut off at the root? Did they fancy themselves a specimen somehow favored by nature? I guess my answer to that is fairly simplistic. I think the teabaggers and the libertarians believe in a form of their own form of social Darwinism, that somehow they believe that, that people exist inside a sphere that is immune from, or can be immune from, any outside source. You hear it when you hear people say, well, I pulled myself up by my bootstraps. Oh, the hell you did in the first place. That's literally an impossibility. I mean, you go back to the earliest part of this, the earliest history of this country, and white folks never pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps. The slaves did it for them. So, you know, that's nonsense. There is something sick and degenerate. That's the best I can come up with, Michael, about teabaggers. I don't think that they believe is life is necessarily nasty, British, and short, at least not for them. But the satisfaction they get is, I think it validates their twisted, sick, greedy, selfish philosophy. And I just wonder, where do they draw the line when it comes to public services being denied to people who've not paid fees? For example, what about subscription police service? How about that? Now, let's supposing your 14-year-old daughter is being raped in the driveway and you didn't sign up for the police subscription service. Would the Ayn Rand teabaggers say, well, then your daughter has to just be raped? Of course they would. Of course they would. How about a fee-for-service military? You know, Think Progress had this on their web page today. A fee-for-service military refusing to repel a terrorist attack on a community that didn't pay up. Right? Michael, I have no answer except the most obvious one to me. The teabaggers are sick sons of bitches. They really are. You know, they may giggle and chortle and laugh and hoot and holler and be smug and mock the man whose house burned down because he didn't pay his subscription fee. But, you know, you can use that that device. What if it was Glenn Beck's house? What if it was Christine O'Donnell's house or Sharon Angle's house or Joe Miller's house or Rand Paul's house, you see? Wouldn't they be running around like, oh, I don't know, like people with their asses on fire screaming, somebody help me put out the fire? And if nobody would because they hadn't paid the fee, but you see, when it gets down to, you know, when it gets personal like that, then I think their philosophical bent towards social Darwinism kind of falls apart. But only in that moment. As long as they have assets and jobs and positions of power and money and are safely ensconced in that white upper 10% of the population, they don't give a damn. Remember, what the character in Wall Street said, greed is good, right? What was his name, Kathy, the Michael Douglas character? Gecko, Gordon Gecko. Greed is good. To these people, greed is good. Greed, in fact, is a disease. It is one of the seven deadly sins, as laid out by the philosophers who put together their phony-ass Holy Bible, which none of them ever pay any attention to unless it says rape, pillage, steal, loot, burn, take. So let me cap that by saying, I just hate them. I hate their guts. And after November 2nd, the polls couldn't be wrong. After November 2nd, these are the people who are going to run America. They really, really are. The only bulwark, such as he is, against a total collapse of the country will be Barack Obama with his veto power. But Barack Obama, I think that's going to be his historic function. He will have been the man who had all 10 of his fingers and all 10 of his toes in the dike behind which roils this putrid capitalistic greed. And Barack Obama, in the 2 years that he has left on his first term, held that flood of garbage back until the American public could see what the bastards were trying to do. And by 2012, ended the Republican Party completely by voting every one of the sons of bitches out of office and sending them back wherever, whatever dimension of horror and disease they came from. Who knows? But that may be Barack Obama's function. All right. Oh, Christ. Kathy, I don't want these Tea Party supporters. I really don't. They're scum. They're just scum. No, it's not fun anymore. You know, it's not fun to eviscerate because especially these ones like this Scott in Houston, Texas, listening on Sirius. You know, as soon as he realizes that he's being gutted, he'll drop an F-bomb or something. Get rid of him. I don't want anything to do with these people. I really don't. I just don't want anything to do with them. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Listen carefully.
Wait a minute. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Next hour, this piece of human waste, Carl Paladino, is going to feel the lash of the Malloy program. Also, Prairie 2 missive that he sent in yesterday. I never got around to. We're going to do it tonight. And not just Paladino, but some of these other teabag bastards. Oh, my God. Lyndon Phoenix writes, Mike, you know this demand of the Tea Party freaks incessantly wanting Obama's birth certificate has just worn itself out with me. I'm actually becoming highly suspicious of these people and where the hell they really come from. I think they're part of a larger evil corporate conspiracy. I think they were manufactured by Monsanto's genetically modified organisms laboratory. We should demand they prove they're actually organically created humans through DNA testing or shut the hell up. Lyndon Phoenix. Yeah, well, if you tried to do that, of course, the teabaggers, since they're all little whiny-ass cowards, they would all just start screaming, "Oh, you touch me! I'm going to sue you! I'm going to sue you!" From Jim in Burlingame, California. Mike, I was listening to Amy Goodman this morning. I'm now at work listening to your Monday night podcast. Anyway, on Amy's show, she had a story that was a major blast from the past. Debtors' prisons. Here in the USA. Yep, they're throwing the older, poorer, and darker members of our shining city on the hill into the dungeon. Some good old tough love for those deadbeats who can't pay a traffic ticket in Ohio. The ACLU reports that people have gotten jail time for just that, even though, here's the punchline, it is unconstitutional in Ohio to jail someone for their inability to pay a debt. Major LOL makes me want to take my old copy of Oliver Twist to read Into the Outhouse. But not to worry, I'm sure some bleeding heart activist judge will rule these people should not have to go to prison, but to the church workhouse instead. Then they can be farmed out to pick crops so we can deport the Mexicans, or maybe just send them to Tennessee where they can put out fires for folks who forgot to both pay for their privatized fire protection and to get Granny out of the attic. Just another one of those days in America, Mike. I think I'll down a handful of Cialis with some Johnny Walker Black so I can take a trip into Thomas Kincaid's rainforest. Oh, no, the woman in the next bathtub looks like Sarah Palin. Help! Jim, Thomas Kincaid's rainforest. Oh, my God. Makes me think of bridges to Madison County for some reason. Wrong Kincaid? Wrong Kincaid. One more thing. You know, Philip Roth has a new book out. What's it called? Nemesis? I think it's Nemesis. Just wrote a review of it in Sunday's New York Times book review section. There are very few Philip Roth novels that I have not read. Got to get this one. Anyway, Gene in Tule Lake, is that how you say it? California sent this to me. She writes, anyone who has studied human history and doesn't come to the same conclusion about religion as quoted by Philip Roth below possesses a brain of devolved mush. This past week on a CBS Sunday Morning, I was watching Philip Roth being interviewed by Rita Braver. Yeah, I saw that. And when Roth was asked about his religious perspective, I was astounded to hear his response, as I always believed him to be a religious individual, but I was more astounded by the interviewer's response. She, apparently caught unawares, and her response was like, oh my God, he doesn't believe in God. It was a terrible revelation for her. The quote starts with Rita Braver asking, do you consider yourself a religious person? Roth said, no, I don't have a religious bone in my body. You don't? No. So you feel there's a God out there? Braver asked. Roth said, no, I'm afraid there isn't, no. Braver said, you know, that telling the whole world that you don't believe in God is going to, you know, have people say, oh my goodness, you know, that's a terrible thing for him to say. Roth replied, when the whole world doesn't believe in God, it'll be a great place. Yet even though he will never stop writing, the chronicler of Newark insists he's unconcerned about how he'll be remembered. Braver said, what would you hope that your legacy would be with all of these books that you've written over these many years? Roth replied, oh gosh, when does the legacy begin? Braver, I think when you're gone, way down the line. When I'm gone, huh? Roth says, okay, I don't worry about that. Now I understand, Gene writes, why I loved Roth's humor and keen insight so much during my teen years. Yeah, who can ever forget... I'm not going to go through his whole canon, but the two that stand out for me are the first two I read. Goodbye, Columbus, and Portnoy's Complaint. That's when I stopped eating fried liver after reading Portnoy's Complaint. I just could never do it again. Kay Petrini, our education affairs correspondent, sent this in, I think yesterday. Hi, Mike. From the Associated Press, a document obtained Friday by the AP showed a Bank of America official acknowledging in a legal procedure that she signed up to 8,000 foreclosure documents a month and typically didn't read them. The official, Renee Hertzler, said in a February deposition, that she signed 7,000 to 8,000 foreclosure documents a month. Hertzler said, I typically didn't read them because of the volume that we sign. End quote. When you covered this story on Friday's show, Kay writes, I was shocked. I mean, don't the teabaggers tell us that government workers have an exclusive franchise on laziness and carelessness? Or how about those legendary paper-pushing government employees stamping signatures on boilerplate documents they never read? Now, what's that old saying? Close enough for government work? Yeah, the teabaggers claim that the private sector does everything better. If we're talking about reaching new levels of incompetence, well, then maybe in this case they're correct. Kay at kaysreportcard.com. Yeah, we mentioned this earlier, like Kay mentioned on Monday. Three companies now, GMAC, Bank of America, which is the largest bank in the country, I believe, and who's the third one? They've stopped foreclosures, I think. I don't think anyone knows right now. Because, you know, this came out, either Mother Jones or The Nation or somebody had this out months ago, that when these mortgages that the banking industry gave to people, all kinds of weird mortgages, nothing down and blue notes and interest only, and they knew what they were doing, the banking industry, when they were just creating instruments that they could use to sell to investors. They were meaningless. They were worthless. So by the time the banks got finished slicing and dicing, bundling and then slicing and dicing these mortgages, nobody knew who in the hell owned what. So all of these people who had been thrown into the street, who was it that, I think it was Marcy Kaptur, who used to be, she was never my representative. She was from Toledo, Ohio. And Marcy Kaptur had said months ago to people in Toledo that were losing their homes, don't move out. Don't go. Because these lending institutions are going to have to prove that they own your house. And so far, nobody can. I mean, who can? So these filthy, filthy clerks for these filthy capitalist banks sign everything. Give it to me. I'll sign the goddamn thing. Didn't matter. So all the people who've been tossed into the street, and they shouldn't have been, right? Oh, well, that's the way it goes in capitalist America. And lit the fuse. Right at the beginning of the network news. Texas, our first number in space. I grew up the United States.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Anyone past the hour, as far as debtor's prison, I got to share this with you, and then we'll take your phone calls. Roz in Canada writes in, Mike, a bit of personal trivia. My first job in London was on Clink Street, actually a little cobbled lane near London Bridge, where the first debtor's prison was located. It was more like a jail. That is why all over the world, prison is known as the Clink. I lived in a part of southeast London where a lot of Dickens books were based, Roz. Well, thank you, Roz. I got thrown in the Clink. There you go. I've wondered about that. Jeremy's in Burlington, Vermont. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Mike. I'm not at all surprised that people call up and say you're lying about the Tea Party when you're the likes of Glenn Beck and people coming on TV and saying that there was nothing really bad about slavery when it first started. It actually was almost harmless.
Nothing bad about what? Jeremy, if you have me on speaker, it might be a little bit easier if...
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't? Okay. Beck said what? I'm sorry.
He said that slavery was a harmless thing when it first started out.
Oh, yeah. Where did I hear somebody talking about that? This is...
It was Overman last night.
That's right. And then the government got involved, right?
Yeah, big government's what destroyed the whole slavery thing, and that it didn't come over here on the ships originally, even though the father of our nation signed it into law, being George Washington.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, Beck is such a dumbass. I mean, he has no working knowledge of history whatsoever, not even his own country. But slavery was extant in this country long before this country was this country.
Right.
Back in the 17th century. Yeah, Jeremy, you're driving us crazy with the noise. All that's coming through your phone. Okay, well, listen, I'd love to hear from you, but when you call in, you can't be doing construction like that. It just, it's not working. Thanks, Jeremy. Call us again sometime, though, please. Charlie is in Spokane, Washington. Hey, Charlie. Charlie?
Charlie? Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Oh, Mike?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Charlie.
Okay, we got some problem with the connection, Charlie. I'll see if Kathy can fix it, and maybe we can get you back on. John is in Somerset, Kentucky. Hey, John.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You was talking earlier about, you know, the teabaggers and how they, it's, you know, you either pay or you die.
Right.
Well, my humble opinion on the teabaggers, and I'm an unapologetic, dirty, left-wing liberal. I'll get that out of the air right now. My humble opinion on the teabaggers is they're just a bunch of parasites and leeches working, you know, off everybody else's back. You know, we're making a living for them. Truth be told, they don't really care about us. And, you know, case in point, the little deal there in Obion County, Tennessee, where, oh, you don't pay your money, you know, your house burns down.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you said last night, they intend to bankrupt the country, buy it back at a fire sale, then make us pay for everything.
Well, yeah, that's what, you know, I've got no problem with somebody who legitimately feels that the country is probably on the wrong track. I felt that way since the Reagan years, but to say it's on the wrong track because of Barack Obama, I mean, that's madness. That's insanity. Where were these scum suckers during 8 years of Bush and his murder boy Cheney? You know, where
they were in the woodwork?
Yeah, I guess so. Where were they during the years of Bill Clinton, when Clinton was signing off on NAFTA, which allowed all the jobs in this country to leave? Where were they during Reagan and Pappy Bush, when hundreds of thousands of people were being butchered in Central America at the command of the capitalists who wanted the cheap labor and wanted the land? Where were they then? So for these vermin to, and that's what they are, to pop up out of the woodwork, as you say, now, and talk about how they want their country back, you know, I'd like to pop every one of them right in the mouth. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I would too. You know, and I know you got a bunch of right-wingers listening right now, and I say this with, you know, pure love for them in my heart. You all can take a bullet train to hell.
A bullet train to hell.
I'll buy the ticket because I'm a nice guy.
Well, all right. Well, thanks, John. I appreciate you checking
in.
All right. Take care. Oh, well. We have to do a break, right? Okay, we'll do a break and then come back and take some more of your calls. Oh, don't forget, coming up next hour, we kind of like, you know, duke it out with, you know, what's his name over there in New York? Carl. Hey, Carl. Hey, yo. Come over here. Come here. Come here. You know what that friend of ours said the other night, right? Huh? No, stick around. Because Carl Palladino, to me, is he is a typical brain-dead, dumbass, teabagger type. And I've had enough of Carl Palladino. Not that I vote in New York or anything, but, I, you know, this guy just turns my stomach. So we're going to chat about him when we, well, next hour. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Stephen is in Burbank, California, listening on Sirius. Hey, Stephen.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Exactly the same as you, only different.
Right.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I use on the lecture circuit, you know, how are you? And I would say something like metaphysically incoherent, politically advanced, and psychologically out of the box.
That's good. I like that.
Thank you, nice man. Yeah, there's this talk about libertarianism and Ayn Rand and all that stuff. And
yeah.
What the baggers don't realize is that the power structure will squelch anything that is in competition to their con, to their scam.
Sure.
And Ayn Rand has this thing that she may have said. I got it out of the June 7th issue of the Nation magazine that said something like, "Now hold on to your hats. Christianity is the best kindergarten for communism." Now don't get bent out of shape.
Well, no, me?
Oh, thank you, nice man.
Well, no, I have no disagreement with that. Christianity is it's very totalitarian. There is no room for any kind of dissent, none whatsoever. And if you don't adhere to the faith as it's laid out, your ass will burn in hell forever.
It's dogma. It's dogmatic.
Well, sure. Yeah.
All dogma is based on myth, and myth is the bald-faced lie that gets the people to subscribe to the plausible notion or the fanciful notion and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And because I may have told you before that I was a Bible something evangelical because I only wanted to find the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And after having read the Bible twice, I became an atheist. And I looked upon the Bible as like a thinking manual. I mean, when you look in Genesis and you see, well, did God create man on day six or day number two, you know? And you can either believe one or the other or both or none, you know? And, you know, the way people think is just out there. But on second note, that has to do with the subject, Mike, is I did fulfill my assignment, and I did read Generation of Vipers.
Oh, did you?
I did, Philip Riley.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted it in the complex. I gave it to a guy, and he said, "Here, read this." Now hold on your hats again. It's called The Illuminati Papers, Robert Anton Wilson, last published 1997. And in this book, it is pure, unadulterated, under the surface, not blatant in your face, but it is the Ayn Randian libertarian trying to push it on you stuff.
Uh-huh.
But there's a lot of good stuff in it, and I knew what it was when I started reading it, and I assumed I became like a Zen master would do. He assumed like a squirrel, like there's a certain species of squirrel that can only eat a certain kind of nut. This nut is half poison. And only the squirrel knows which is half, and the squirrel will eat the nutritious part and throw away the toxic part. And so I read this Illuminati papers. There's a lot of good stuff in it, but
and you tried,
know, don't take it hook, line, and sinker.
You tried to be like the squirrel.
Well, yes, of course. I tried to be like the trout, you know, that knows how to take the salmon egg off the hook without getting hooked. Without getting reeled in.
You know, Stephen, I'm sure that there probably is some good stuff, I guess. But anything that even rhymes with the word Illuminati, I just turn around and run the other way.
Exactly.
You know, and, like the Trilateral Commission is taking,
exactly,
taking over the world or the Club of Rome or the Bohemian Grove. I mean, I it's probably all true. Probably the...
No. Robert Anton Wilson has a PhD in psychology, and that's what hooked me on it.
Well, look at the background of the founder of Scientology. If you want to see a real nutcase, L. Ron Hubbard. Right. I mean, just take a look at Scientology, and a lot of people. There are hundreds of thousands of people who, if they could, you know, all of a sudden descend on this program in a manner of speaking, they would say, "You're crazy, Malloy. Scientology saved my life, saved my family, saved me, made me rich, made me non-materialistic, made me materialistic, made me sane. Maybe, you know, all this stuff. And I mean, anybody with more than a seventh grade education can understand fully that L. Ron Hubbard was a psychopath and that Scientology is this mishmash of garbage that
it is.
And, but they make great commercials for television. I love their commercials. Well, that's the way I feel about Illuminati this or Illuminati that. It's madness.
Well, he says that it doesn't really exist as we've been brainwashed into believing that it exists. He says, no, man. He says, there's no Illuminati, you know. If we want to be, we can be the Illuminati. All we got to do is just start thinking on our own and forget about all the stuff that the society tries to jam into our heads. I mean, I even came up with a title. I don't know if it would be for a book or something to apply to any given situation. I called it the societal belief syndrome. And syndrome means like it's an illness, you know. And we've had this syndrome since the shamans in hunter-gatherer society figured out how to con and scam and get the rest of the tribe to do what they wanted to do, you know, the alpha dog.
Right.
You know, con them and get them to do what you want to do. And that's what religion is.
Yeah, that's true. All right, Stephen, I got to move on.
Okay, boss.
Hey, well, don't be a stranger. Oh, wait a second. I didn't take phone calls there for the longest time, but don't be a stranger, all right?
I'll try not to be, my son.
All right. Take care. Take care. The Illuminati. Kawai John writes, the teabaggers didn't get the point of Atlas Shrugged. There's a quote here. Was this John Galt? If you let idiots run your government, everything will fall apart. That's a quote, John says, from Atlas Shrugged. And it'd have to be, I guess, from John Galt. Imagine, John writes, the teabaggers are so stupid that even their famous author didn't get the point. Yeah, I've given up on that, too, John. I really have, because, you know, when so many of these teabaggers say things, and they usually say this in the same sentence. They think cap and trade is a hoax, and Ayn Rand was a genius, and they want to be just like her. Half of them don't know it's a her. Half of them don't know her history. They don't understand that she was a more or less a Russian royalist. And as far as her two most notable books, Atlas Shrugged and The Fountainhead. God, I hate those senior moments. I will guarantee anyone who wants to make the bet that maybe one out of 600,000 of these dumbass teabaggers have ever read anything by Ayn Rand. A. B. If you ask them the points of difference between The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged, or anything about the main characters, you would get a blank stare. But somebody, Beck or one of these other freak bastards, stepped on their foot and the tops of their heads popped open, just like a garbage disposal does at home. And into their head was poured a bunch of disconnected facts and names and dates and times and places. And like most useful idiots, they will remember maybe 0.1% of whatever was pumped into their heads. I love watching these videos that we've played on this program, the audio portions anyway. What is it? New Left Media? Is that what it is, Kathy? Where the teabaggers are interviewed and you listen to the answers to the questions that they're asked. And I mean, it's astonishing. I've never come across such ignorance. And it's across the spectrum of their little movement. I mean, it is so weird, beyond weird. But these are the people who are going to be governing the country after November 2nd. Charlie is in Spokane. Hey, Charlie. Charlie?
I'm here, Mike.
Yeah, welcome to the program.
Okay, it's working better?
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Say, all my brother and out there who are firefighters, we should all be angry as hell about what's taking. Mike, I'm going to pull the plug on my phone here. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Okay. Are you there?
Yeah.
That's better.
Okay.
I have my headset on.
Uh-huh.
I'm a retired volunteer firefighter from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And in Minnesota, only nine fire departments are full-time. The rest are all volunteering. I was one of the larger suburbs of Minneapolis when I was a firefighter.
Uh-huh.
And I know there's another big rally coming up. Is it Colbert that's got it coming
right
up?
Yes.
If we could get all of our brethren out there, who should all be mad as hell,
right,
about that privatized fire department denying that lady's home and letting it burn to the ground.
Yeah.
Get all of us to mark.
Yeah, Charlie, you're starting to fade way out again. Listen, pal, we're going to have to try it another night. I appreciate you trying, though. Thanks, Charlie. We'll be right back. It is 10 before the hour. Josh is in Oklahoma City, listening online. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Oh, all right. I was just reading Imperial Life in the Emerald City and was getting depressed, and I've been listening to you for several years.
Yeah?
Just calling in to say I appreciate your voice and keep up the good work.
Well, that's very kind of you, Josh. I appreciate it. How long have you been listening to this program?
Well, I was introduced to you back when you were on, I think it's IE America.
Oh, my God.
The broadcast that was online that was supported by the Automotive Union.
Yeah, the UAW. Yeah, we were on Sirius online and about three radio stations. I think one of them was Clinton, Arkansas.
Well, voices like yours are rare here, so it's nice to have access to something like that.
You live in Oklahoma City, huh?
Yes, sir.
I'll tell you
the middle of the monkey cage.
Are you familiar with Bart Cop's website?
Yes, sir.
Oh, you do go to Bart Cop. Okay.
Yes, sir.
There's somebody else, if I can just find the damn thing. Anytime I want something in a hurry, I can't get it. There's a guy who lives in Oklahoma City who writes to us a lot. You've probably heard me mention some of his emails. And
I think he's one of your bureau chiefs, isn't he?
Well, years and years ago, way back. Oh my God, you do go back a long way, don't you? When we used to have bureau chiefs. Oh my God, that was so cute, wasn't it? I always thought that was so cute, having bureau chiefs. But yeah, I think he was one. Damn it, I can't find his, he's got a website and he lives right there in Oklahoma City.
Well, and I've got one quick comment, if you don't mind.
Sure, go ahead.
You were talking about Ayn Rand, and I don't know if you read Krugman or not, but
all the time.
He had a comment about somebody had called him Ellsworth Tootie. But this is about Ayn Rand's influence. There are two novels that can change a bookish 14-year-old's life, The Lord of the Rings and Atlas Shrugged. One is a childish fantasy that often engenders a lifelong obsession with unbelievable heroes, leading to an emotionally stunted, socially crippled adulthood unable to deal with the real world. The other, of course, involves orcs.
All right. Josh, thanks. I'm glad you've been there, man. Thanks a lot. Call again, okay?
Thank you, Mike. Keep up the good work.
All right, sir. Take care. Gordon in Oklahoma City. What is his website? Damn it! I'm just drawing a complete blank here. Because I would like... I mentioned it once or twice. So I'll just have to mention it again. Bob is in Syracuse, New York, listening on Sirius. Hey, Bob.
How are you doing today, Mike?
Hey, how are you?
I am doing well. A little confused about this governor's race. I know you know that it's crazy up here in New York right now.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I don't want Paladino in by any stretch of the imagination.
Right, yeah.
I was not going to vote at all, and I really can't do that. I mean, I'm that upset with the Democrats, too, but
yeah.
I'm not going to do that. I've got a place to vote, and I'm thinking of going with a third-party candidate, Kristen Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with her at all?
No, I don't. I know absolutely nothing about her. The only reason I'm at least a bit familiar with New York State politics is because, you know, I subscribe to the Times, New York Times, and I get their, you know, I read their New York section, and have for years, and it's pretty awful what has gone on there. But this Paladino guy, I'll tell you what, you want to stick around. I hope you're going to be listening to the next hour, because I've got some things to say about Paladino that have been building up for a couple of months. I'm just going to unload on him. I literally hate these people. I don't know. I don't know these candidates. Sharon Angell in Nevada, or Rand Paul, or this Joe Miller up in Alaska, or Paladino in New York. I don't know these people. And, you know, I don't live in their states. I don't live in their districts. You know, I live here in Georgia, where we have just a bunch of goddamn fools down here in the Republican Party. These people, some of them appear and act as though they just learned to walk upright about a month ago. But I despise them all. All these teabag freaks. I mean, they co-opt the language of the civil rights movement. They steal the language of the peace and freedom movement. They steal the tactics of people who are genuinely interested in justice for everybody in this country, including these dumbass teabaggers. They take all this stuff. None of it comes organically from the teabaggers. These people are useless, but they steal everything they can get their hands on from any attempt to organize people over the past, you know, 40 years. And in the process of stealing it and holding their mass rallies or trying to talk the talk and walk the walk, they become cartoon characters. But I still hate them. I hate them for their thievery. I hate them for their dishonesty. I hate them for their injustice. I hate them for their greed and their selfishness. I mean, I really do. These teabaggers, I just despise them. So that's one of the reasons I'm going to focus on some of these people, especially Paladino next hour. Stick around, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. 7 past the hour. You know, last night when we were chatting about the Matt Taibbi's impression of the Teabaggers at this gathering in, was it Kentucky? All these gasping, wheezing Teabaggers in their government paid for wheelchairs and sucking oxygen and so on and so on. Greg in Maryland writes, oh, and it's John Boehner who helps finance Big Tobacco, which gives lung cancer to the aged teabaggers, which is the cause of their wearing expensive oxygen tanks. Tanks covered by Medicare, which was passed by liberals. Coverage they'd lose by voting for the nutty teabagger candidates. Go figure. Greg in Maryland. Yeah, of course. That's what I'm saying. Let these vermin into office. Just get them in there. Get every single teabagger candidate that can possibly be elected. Elect them. And then watch what happens. Watch what happens. Yeah, Boehner is a chain smoker. He loves his nicotine, man. I would imagine it wouldn't be too much longer before they discover a polyp somewhere in his throat and or on his lung. Dr. Sachs, who writes to me, Dr. Sachs Man, who writes to me occasionally, he is a saxophone player with the Count Basie Band. Got this email from him this morning, very early this morning. He writes, yo, I can't get to sleep listening to your podcast. Funny blank. Funny doo-doo, only didn't say doo-doo. He goes on, we were in Istanbul for 4 days, September 20th through the 24th. I listened to your show. I meant to write you about it because I was thinking how many American heads would explode with all the mosques everywhere here in Istanbul. One guy asked me before I left, wasn't I scared to go there? Jeez, there were 2 Starbucks in our hotel street alone. People really need to get out more. I'll write you about my views on everything. And, oh, yeah, I'm not a witch. Dr. Saxman. His name is Marshall, and he's plays with the Count Basie Orchestra. Thanks, Marshall. You afraid to go to Istanbul? Prairie 2. I meant to get to this last night. Didn't have a chance. He writes, the stock market was down yesterday, reportedly on a slight fall in factory output, but the far more significant news was that the Department of Justice has started to enforce antitrust laws for the first time in 30 years. Today's civil action by the government is against the big 3 credit card companies for using their stranglehold on their retail merchants to prevent any competition by smaller rivals. One of the things Obama promised when taking office was that the antitrust division of the Department of Justice would again take its job seriously. This is possibly one of the first of many actions against the loot and pillage business plan of predatory capitalism. The big corporations have had a free hand for so long that most Americans don't remember when it wasn't this way. State and local officials are planning their budgets and are still struggling with diminished revenue streams from the possibility of Republican control of Congress. Municipalities are going to need to lay off 900,000 people when the federal stimulus money runs out, and this will cripple local government and could start a stampede to Chapter 9 bankruptcy court. Republicans are just licking their lips with the prospect of busting all the public employee union contracts and driving down wages to a fraction of what municipal workers make now. This will also be hard on municipal bondholders, but these are middle-class people who foolishly thought government bonds were safe, and they'll blame Obama, so it's a win-win for the Republicans. But what really has conservatives feeling that warm glow is that the pension plans will be done away with under Chapter 9. Nothing makes a right-winger's day like putting grandma out in the street. This all assumes that Congress doesn't advance more money, and this is why Republicans are pulling out all the stops in November. With control of the House, they could stop dead any spending and deliver the coup de grace to a middle-class-based economy. More bankruptcies would also help fuel a deflationary spiral, making it possible for the super-rich to acquire still more of the nation's wealth for pennies on the dollar. Welcome to the new golden age. Corporations are sitting on almost as much cash as the Red Chinese, with over $1.6 trillion in the bank now, much of it raised by issuing corporate bonds at near zero interest rates as a result of the Federal Reserve cheap money policy. The Fed said they needed to loan trillions to the big Wall Street banks at zero interest to stimulate the economy. This money has in turn trickled down to corporate bonds, but they are getting the money so cheap they feel no need to actually do anything with it. The corporate wisdom is to wait either for the stock market to crash and buy their own stock for a fraction of what it's worth now, or wait until the economy goes south and do some mergers and acquisitions to further consolidate their monopolies. The amount Obama spent on actual stimulus is a tiny fraction of what these bloated corporations are sitting on. And this really is taxpayer money. Sure, the Federal Reserve created it out of thin air, but it has our name on it, and we will eventually pay for it. This free money was supposed to make our economy go again. Oh, but I forgot, it's not our economy anymore. It belongs to the top 0.1%, and they'll do what they want with it. PrairieNumeral2.com. Scary stuff. I've said it before. I've said it a million times. I know you're tired of hearing it. I'm tired of saying it. I just wonder how much longer this illusion of where we live and who we are can continue. Seriously. I don't know, man. But I say elect the bastards, get them all in there. They're going to steal the elections anyway. So I know it's very difficult to and I said it before, but I'm going to adopt a more neutral stance. It's very difficult to say, hey, Democrats, progressives, stay home. Don't bother. The voting is rigged. The game is rigged. Ever since Citizens United versus whatever, the Supreme Court ruled that fascist organizations like News Corp, run by Rupert Murdoch, can contribute millions, and he has. What was his latest gift? Fox News Corp, didn't they give $1 million to the Chamber of Commerce, which is in turn using the money in their political action committees to lie, cheat, steal, misrepresent, and commit fraud with their TV commercials in this election cycle. So there's two schools of thought on this, I guess. And the first one says resist. Resist this. Fight like hell, even knowing that the voting machines are already programmed to produce a certain result in those areas where voting machines are used. I don't see the use of voting machines diminishing, do you? Let's go back to paper ballots, where you mark an X next to the candidate you'd like to be your senator, your representative, your whatever. So two schools of thought. Resist! Resist! Fight like hell! And hope for the outcome that you're fighting for. Or B, don't resist. Adopt a more Buddhist attitude and just kind of the George Bush / Buddhist attitude. You know, bring it on. Bring it on! Let's do it! Come on! Come on, you teabag bastards! Let's do it! Give them the offices they all seek. No? The Buddhist / George Bush attitude is not a good one? Why not? I think it makes great sense. We've got 2 years then before everything starts exploding.
liberal is a good word. It's More Mike Malloy.
Not only would going ahead and giving the whole damn thing to these teabag freaks, not only will that, you know, end this this weird fascination by the brain dead aging baby boomers with I want my country back. Listen to me, Chucky, and listen to me, Marge. You're never getting your country back. It wasn't yours to begin with, you fools. You had the illusion that it was your country, these United States of America. Big mistake, booby. It's not yours. But anyway, I digress. Go ahead. Let the baggers take over. Like this Carl Paladino who wants to be governor of New York. Ow! How about this guy? He says he is going to become the governor of New York and then go up to Albany, New York, capital, and take out the trash. Okay, it's not a bad idea. Not a bad idea. But Paladino is going to take out the trash? Paladino is has around him, his campaign people, are people who have broken the law. His campaign manager, for example, failed to pay nearly $53,000 in federal taxes, which prompted the IRS to take action against him. An aide who frequently drives Paladino on the campaign trail served time in jail time in Arizona on charges of drunk driving and a hit and run. Another advisor has been indicted on charges of stealing more than $1 million from Mayor Michael Bloomberg's reelection last year. Paladino's campaign chairwoman left a local government position but claimed she had steered $1 billion in public money to a politically connected investment manager. Michael Barbaro, writing the New York Times, says the backgrounds of these people could raise questions about the kind of cabinet Mr. Paladino would assemble if elected in November. Raise questions? No, they don't, Michael. It's pretty clear. He's a goddamn criminal. He's a freak. He's a madman. He looks like somebody who's been on cocaine for about 8 years, and all of a sudden he's trying to get down. It's not going to make it. In an interview, Michael Caputo, the campaign manager who owed the IRS, you know, tons and tons of money, Michael Caputo said, quote, "This is a campaign of junkyard dogs, not pedigreed poodles," end quote. Really? Junkyard dogs? the executive director of Common Cause New York, government watchdog group, Susan Lerner, said Mr. Paladino seemed to have two ethical standards, one for those he wants to toss out of Albany, New York, the capital, and another set for those working on his election campaign. Really? Caputo said, hey, my tax problems, that's because I had poor skills as a businessman. You know, I'm used to going out and killing people, breaking kneecaps, you know. They want me to run a business. What the hell am I supposed to do? I couldn't intimidate the bastards, you know? Besides, most people I know have problems paying their taxes. I'm just like everybody else. Well, not quite like everybody else, Mr. Caputo. You're a gangster. You're a killer. You're a mobster. You're a freak. You're a lawbreaker. You're probably an arsonist. I've watched episodes of The Sopranos. I don't think I missed one. I know who you are, Mr. Caputo. Most people I know have trouble paying their taxes. Well, that's could be true, but I mean, you know, eventually all of us pay them or something. You say, nah. It's not my fault, man. I didn't know what I was doing, you know? In the early 1990s, Mr. Thompson, who was Palladino's driver, was charged with driving under the influence, damaging a vehicle in a hit-and-run, and driving with a suspended license. According to Arizona court records, Mr. Thompson recalled that he had been drinking at a family barbecue, argued with his wife, and drove off to avoid making a scene. How'd that work out for you there, Thompson? But he said he hit another car and was arrested. Records show that he served jail time in connection with the charges. Well, you got a problem with that? The old lady was getting my case, man. You know, I had a few drinks, right? So I puked in the wedding cake. You know what? What? She starts yelling at me. So, you know, it's either deck the broad or leave. I left. So I got in a car wreck. So what? So I split. So what? So I went to jail. So what? Most people I know go to jail. I'm just like everybody else. What the hell is this music about? What are you saying, eh?
Before
the hour. So, Carl Palladino, man, you know, I like the teabaggers. I liked them all, and especially this guy. This guy, yeah. Put this guy in as governor of New York. All the people running his campaign, for the most part, are criminals. They've all been convicted of something or accused of something. Two of Palladino's campaign advisors have been accused of misdeeds involving large sums of money. Yeah. Like how much, man? You know, what's large? All right. His chairwoman, Nancy Naples, decided not to seek re-election as Erie County Comptroller in 2005 after the Buffalo New York News reported that she had directed 80% of the county's bond business to one of her campaign donors. Hey, you know, that's like hundreds of millions of dollars, right? Another one, John Haggerty, a political strategist on the Palladino team, was indicted this past summer by the Manhattan District Attorney, who accused him of stealing $1.1 million from Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, and using part of the money to buy a house. Well, I don't blame you. He's pleaded not guilty. And Caputo, the Palladino campaign manager, says, hey, this is Naples, who's never truly accused of doing anything wrong. As for the charges against Mr. Haggerty, Caputo suggests they were politically motivated. Caputo said, quote, Carl doesn't throw his friends under the bus. No, he doesn't. He just puts his enemies under the bus, right? Dumbass, of course you don't put your friends under the bus. Ask what message, according to Michael Barbaro, writing in the New York Times here, ask what message the campaign was sending by relying on these kinds of aides. Caputo said, hey, you introduce me to somebody who's pristine and clean. I'll be happy to meet him. I never met anybody like that. End quote. Yeah, well, you probably never would, Caputo. I mean, come on. Ah. What do you hang out with? Look at your boy. Look at Palladino. But I like that line where Caputo said, regarding his own tax problems, most people I know have had problems paying their taxes. I'm just like everybody else. Where have I heard that before? That's right. The Not a Witch Delaware Senate candidate Christine O'Donnell. She's got a new 30-second ad out, and it, I swear to God, it looks like it was shot right here in the Malloy studio. Everything's dark. She's got on this dark dress. It's a dark background. She's got a little strand of pearls. She just reeks, some kind of black arts, right? And she says, I'm not a witch. That's the first thing out of her mind. I'm not a witch. She goes on to say, I'm nothing you've heard. I'm you. Ah! You're me! God damn, then who am I? You're me! And Caputo says, I'm just like anybody else, you know? I don't pay my taxes. And here's Christine. I'm not a witch. I'm not a witch. I'm not a witch. I'm nothing you've heard. I'm you. Oh, my God, you're me?
Every time I hear her say that, every time I hear that bit, I keep thinking about, I can't help it, Munchkin Land. And when they come up and ask Dorothy, are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Right. Well, Caputo and Palladino and this freak out in Nevada, what's her name? Sharon Angle, who lives off, sucks off the public teat. She and her husband, right, have been for forever. No visible means to support. It's like the Democrat over, what's his name, Green, over in South Carolina. The way he's going to finance state government, he's going to sell action figure dolls of himself. But Christine O'Donnell, I'm not a witch. I'm not. I really am not. I'm nothing you've heard. I'm you. Oh, my God.
Well, wasn't Sharon Angle the one that said the way you could solve the insurance problem or something was you could barter your medical bills for chickens for doctor's services?
No, the woman you're thinking of didn't make it through the first
chickens
round.
Chickens for checkups.
Yeah, chickens for checkups. O'Donnell goes on to say, I'm you. None of us are perfect. Isn't that what Caputo, isn't that what the teabaggers over here in New York are saying? Hey, this is a campaign of junkyard dogs, not pedigree poodles. Nobody's perfect, right? Ah! And O'Donnell says, none of us are perfect, but none of us can be happy with what we see all around us. Politicians who think spending and trading favors and backroom deals are the ways to stay in office. I'll go to Washington and do what you'd do. I'm you. I'm not a witch. Really. Now look into my eyes. I'm you. I'm you. You're me. You know, you get too far into Christine O'Donnell's ad and you think you're looking at something, one of those ads from the Scientologists, right? Have you seen those? I got to tell you, for an organization that is as fruitcake and nutty as the Scientologists, they do some damn good TV ads, man. Boy, those are great ads, you know, all done in kind of a diffused blue and all these people. And it's just like, oh, my God, this looks just like L. Ron Hubbard's kind of writing. You know, it's just science fiction-y. And then it's very in Scientology. Don't worry. Are you depressed? Are you suicidal? Is your name Glenn Beck? Okay, no. I'm you. I'm you. Hey, can you run that ad? Do you have it, Kathy? Well, here, I think I've got it for you. Let me just... Well, you have to see it, but you also have to... you have to hear the melodious... I was going to try a different word, but I'm afraid I'll mispronounce it. The melodious tone to O'Donnell's voice. I mean, it's just, this stuff is funny, except for the fact that it's not. You know what I'm saying? But there's only one way to make the boils on your body go away, and that is to lance them, right? So, I say, let's go ahead and put these teabag nutcases in office. And then all the people, especially these poor, melanin-deprived baby boomers, the ones out there who, hey, hold on a minute while I take another suck through my oxygen tank. Just a second, hold on. You know where I got this oxygen tank? I got it free. I got it free from Social Security because, you know, a bunch of liberals voted this kind of stuff in when they voted in Medicare. But you know what? I'm going to vote for all the teabaggers I can because you know why? Because I think the government spends too much money, not on me, but on those, you know, dark-skinned people. I mean, go ahead. Let's get them in. And as I mentioned last night, Politico.com recently pointed out that every major contender for the 2012 Republican presidential nomination who isn't currently holding office and isn't named Mitt Romney is now a paid contributor to Fox. Every single one of them. As Paul Krugman writes, media moguls have often promoted the careers and campaigns of politicians they believe will serve their interests, but directly cutting checks to political favorites takes it to a whole new level of blatancy. I'm not a witch. Arguably, Krugman writes, this shouldn't be surprising. Modern American conservatism is in large part a movement shaped by billionaires and their bank accounts, and assured paychecks for the ideologically loyal are an important part of the system. Scientists willing to deny the existence of man-made climate change, economists willing to declare that tax cuts for the rich are essential to growth, strategic thinkers willing to provide rationales for wars of choice, lawyers willing to provide defenses of torture, all can count on support from a network of organizations that may seem independent on the surface, but are largely financed by a handful of ultra-wealthy families, like the Koch brothers, the Coors family. I'm not a witch. Do you have that? Okay. And as Krugman says, these organizations have long provided havens for conservative political figures not currently in office, like Senator Rick Santorum, the guy who insisted his children play with mummified fetuses. He was defeated in 2006, and he got a new job as head of the America's Enemies Program. There is such a thing, America's Enemies Program, at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, a think tank that has received funding from, well, America's enemies, the Koch brothers and the Coors family.
Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, Rick Santorum is one of those paid Fox contributors contemplating a presidential run. I know, what's the difference between Fox and the media moguls of old? One immediately thinks of, what's his name? The Hearst Empire, William Randolph. Well, for one thing, Fox News seems to have decided that it no longer needs to maintain even the pretense of being nonpartisan. So writes Paul Krugman, nobody who is paying attention has ever doubted what Fox is in reality. It is a part of the Republican political machine, but the network, with its Orwellian slogan, fair and balanced, has always denied the obvious. Officially, it still does. But by hiring these Republican candidates while at the same time making million-dollar contributions to the Republican Governors Association and the rabidly anti-Obama United States Chamber of Commerce, Murdoch's News Corporation, which owns Fox, is signaling that it no longer feels the need to make any effort to keep up appearances. Something else has changed, too. Increasingly, Fox News has gone from merely supporting Republican candidates to anointing them. Christine O'Donnell, the upset winner of the Republican Senate primary in Delaware, is often described as the Tea Party candidate. But given the publicity Fox Network gave her, she could easily or equally be described as the Fox News candidate. Doo-dee-doo-doo. I want to hear, can we hear the I'm Not a Witch? Here's Christine O'Donnell. Or there she is, or where she is. Do we have her?
I'm not a witch.
Start that again. I'm not a witch. All right, try it. See what you can do. Maybe you can't. I don't know. That's the only part I wanted to hear. I'm not a witch. I'm you. You ready?
That you've heard. I'm you.
I'm you.
None of us are perfect, but none of us can be happy with what we see all around us. Politicians who think spending, trading favors, and backroom deals are the ways to stay in office.
Bathroom deals?
I'll go to Washington and do what you'd do. I'm Christine O'Donnell, and I approve this message. I'm you.
Oh, what's wrong with it? I like the last part where she says, I'm you. She says it again. Yeah, let's try it again. Here we go. No, we're not. I guess we're not going to go. Okay, never mind. But the funny part is when she says twice, I'm you. I'm not a witch. I'm you. I'm not me. I'm you. Okay, go ahead.
I'm not a witch. I'm nothing you've heard. I'm you. None of us are perfect, but none of us can be happy with what we see all around us. Politicians who think spending, trading favors, and backroom deals are the ways to stay in office. I'll go to Washington and do what you'd do. I'm Christine O'Donnell, and I approve this message. I'm you.
No, you're not. And, sweetie, it's not none of us are perfect. It's none of us is perfect. I'm sorry. I hate to do that to you, but Prairie 2 and Michael and Reg and a couple others do it to me all the time, so I'll do it to Christine. The proper way is none of us is perfect. I'm you. I'm you. I don't think so. Yes?
Did you ever think in your life that you would be watching a serious political campaign that started, I'm not a witch?
No.
I mean, did you ever think you'd see a campaign at, I mean, could you just see, for example, could you say, hey, I'm Bill Clinton, I'm not a witch?
Well, you know,
I mean, could you see anything?
No, I'll tell you the truth, I'd rather see somebody in a political campaign say, hi, I'm a witch. My name is Lady Galadriel.
Michelle Bachmann.
No, not her. She's a cannibal. No, I mean, really, I'd like to see some serious candidate. A woman who sits in front of the camera the way Christine does with this one. And like I say, it looks like that ad was shot here in our studio. It's all dark. There's a little tinkling piano. But I like to see the candidate say, hi, my name is Lady Galadriel. I'm a witch. And I want to be elected your senator for a number of reasons, not the least of which I will call on the universal powers to bring peace and tranquility to this sad, bleeding, torn nation. We'll all get together on the high holy days, the spring equinox, the summer solstice, the fall equinox, and the winter solstice, and we'll dance, and we'll sing, and we'll join hands, and we'll embrace. My name is Lady Galadriel. I'm a witch, and I approve this message. Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be wonderful? Instead of having somebody who is anti-masturbation sit there and say, well, I'm not a witch. I really am not. I don't even play one on TV. I'm you. No, you're not, honey. No, not ever. Not in this lifetime. Not in your Jesus lifetime. No, never. This is insane. I got to get out of here. I'll see y'all tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. I'm you.